Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. My name is Mark Ellis, and this is one of our After Dark episodes, which means we're going to talk about movies, especially on this particular episode of the program, but that conversation could extend to sprawling recaps of our personal lives. How are our dogs doing? Who were we dating way back in 1998? Why that year? Well, because this year is actually the 25th anniversary of Rotten Tomatoes. So we may say the tomato meter is wrong from time to time on this show, but we love being here at Rotten Tomatoes, celebrating its 25th birthday this year. The actual birthday of Rotten Tomatoes is, I believe, August 18th, I want to say. And so we're going to get into the history of Rotten Tomatoes, but I can't do this show alone. And in the stead of Jacqueline Coley, who is still at home recovering from just covering award season, which is it's a long and arduous task. So she's chilling and relaxing while we have Clark Wolf and Winston A. Marshall back in studio. It was a fantastic chat that the three of us had last week about Keanu Reeves movies and some which we think unfairly maligned films of Keanu Reeves that were rotten on the tomato meter. Not according to us. Talked Knock Knock, The Replacements, Hardball. And so now we're just here for an After Dark episode talking about the Rotten Tomatoes 25th anniversary. Winston, you know from the Capes and Cows weekly show. You also know him as a comedian and actor. You've seen him pop up in a bunch of TV shows, commercials. Always great to have Winston back. And Clark Wolf, who made a sterling debut. So good last week, we brought you back. And also, very exciting because you have a short film coming out called A Shining Example, but also tomorrow in theaters nationwide, you can catch your new movie, Mail'em, is in theaters across the country.
I'm so excited. And please go see it in the theater because it's only going to be in the theaters. It's not going to be on VOD or Blu-ray.
And it's a horror movie. It's fun to see those in theaters.
It's the effects. It's practical effects. The Russells, who did the new Hellraiser movie, and among other things, did our practical effects, and they are awesome.
Can you just like send me like a 4K Blu-ray? Because like I'm not trying to be up in the back of the thing. Oh Lord, no, Jesus.
I think this will interest your audience since it is an After Dark episode. So around Christmas time, my family tries to find alternative Christmas movies, you know, to watch.
Okay.
And, you know, there is a tradition it's in the Christmas Carol, you know, like there'll be scary ghost stories and, you know, like ghost stories.
Yeah.
So,
and tellings of the gories along. Yeah, I mean, it's right? It's a ghost story. Charles Dickens' classic is a ghost story.
Yes, it used to be a tradition, a Christmas tradition. So I suggested The Conjuring 2. Which is a Christmas movie. It takes place at Christmas.
This is why I love Clark, because she does not mess around. She's not like, let's just dip our toe in here. She's like, let me just rip your Christmas-loving heart out the nun, Valak, in The Conjuring 2. My God, you're going for blood.
There are trees, Christmas trees, and Christmas carols, and anyway, so...
Oh, thank you, Clark. That's going to make it so much easier for Winston, who hates horror movies.
So I convinced my parents. They're like, okay, great idea. It's like there's no sex, there's no language, there's no any of that.
That's fair.
And so we went. My dad, who used to play football for the University of Georgia, mm-hmm. and went on to play professionally in the CFL,
he was a bulldog.
Large man. Yes, yes. We got maybe 20 minutes into The Conjuring. And he was literally jumping out of his chair. And he was like, I'm really sorry, everyone, but I cannot watch this.
Man after my own heart.
So I DM'd.
He lasted longer than you did in The Conjuring.
I didn't even see them. I knew better. Future daughter be like, Daddy, let's watch The Conjuring too. Why don't you go to your room? I'm not, absolutely not.
So the funny part of the story is I DM'd James Wan. And I told him this story. And he wrote me back and he was like, first of all, he was like, that's amazing. But second of all, he said, it's always the tough guys. Jason Statham told me the exact same thing.
Yeah?
He was like, I cannot watch your movies. They're too scary for me. And I was like, well, my dad's in good company. But yes, so the big tough guys, big action guys being like, no, James Wan, no, I
cannot
do it.
Clark's dad and Jason Statham running towards trouble, unless that trouble is an undead nun, perhaps. And then you get it. I mean, celebrate your holidays how you want to celebrate your holidays. Your birthdays, I really don't celebrate my birthday that much. I actually love getting older. I embrace the process of sitting in a rocking chair and yelling at kids, but I don't do a lot for my birthday. Are you a big birthday party person, Clark?
I used to be before COVID.
Okay.
COVID kind of broke me with birthdays. I my birthday is in a couple of weeks, and I have made no
birthday.
Thank you. And I'm thinking actually that this weekend I might take some friends to go see Malum. That might be like my birthday celebration.
That's a good play
because it's close enough.
Yeah, it's your birthday. It's allowed to be about you, but it's, I mean, it's a great film and you happen to be one of the stars of
exactly.
it. So, Winston, do you take people to see your new movie in theaters on your birthday?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if I don't have a new one, I'm like, we're going to watch that episode of that show did like a couple years ago. This is going to be fun.
We did something for your birthday last year, right?
Yes.
Wasn't there a thing?
Yeah. No, absolutely. So,
we went to a bar. It was a very nice bar setup you had there.
So, what I did, I'm big into themes, and so 35 I was having trouble figuring out what
Life.
Theme I wanted to do.
Oh, okay.
So what I ended up doing is I ended up recreating or attempting to recreate all 34 previous birthdays as birthday number 35, and then when that got too ambitious, I changed it to there was childhood, like kind of adolescence / 20s, and then like adulthood. And so like the first half was like laser tag and mini golf and like, since there's no arcade, we went Dave and Buster's. And then we transitioned into like the teen college years. So we had like a house party with beer pong and all that stuff. And then like the adult one is like, you go to a nice bar, you maybe have a couple shots here and there, but you kind of keep it classy. And then you go home and pass out.
And so I saw him at the bar and I didn't realize he was doing like a whole Richard Linklater look back at my life kind of thing. But I was surprised you were still standing because I knew that beer pong was early in the day.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you all know I love playing beer pong. I'm pretty damn good at it. But I was surprised that you were still upright because you had all that partying. But you still seem pretty lucid and like able to celebrate your birthday competently.
It was because since I really took the childhood thing to heart, I didn't drink at all in the beginning until we got to Dave and Buster's. And even then, it was like a drink.
Oh, did you have juice boxes?
Oh,
a Capri Sun for Winston's birthday.
Sunny D and Capri Sun, baby.
Yes!
It was amazing.
Purple stuff. Give it to me.
Absolutely. But once we got to the house party, it was no holds barred. I think it's just, I had mentally prepared all day. Make sure you're eating, drinking a lot of water, take your vitamins because this is like a marathon.
Yes, not a sprint.
Yes. So that's the only reason you saw me in like any sort of like normal condition.
I love that because like if you're in college and like you're that age or you're mid-20s and like you have that idea to do like a birthday party where it's going to celebrate like what Rotten Tomatoes is probably going through right now with turning 25. Hey, congrats. You can now rent a car by yourself. But you're thinking like, oh, I can do this whole look back at my life. You're not mature enough to do that yet. And handle it like Winston did, because that's a 35-year-old man studying this and being like,
Indeed.
Okay, I need to pace myself. Back in our 20s, we didn't really pace ourselves all that much, or at least we weren't all that good at pulling it off. And so Rotten Tomatoes, one of the things they're doing to celebrate their birthday, which is going to be a year-long celebration, is releasing this new card game that is so much fun to play. And you can play in a variety of different ways. You can involve the tomato meter, the audience score. Our hand model Winston is showing you exactly how it works.
Ooh.
Reminded me of, I think, an all-time great card game that should be played in Vegas, Uno.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's wild cards. So you got a couple wild cards that it's, and you can give hints as to the movie, whoever gets the movie first. If your family around the holidays isn't into watching horror movies, then you can play the Rotten Tomatoes card game all the year round. We are not going to let this go for the rest of the show.
No, no, we're
Clark
not.
Her, torture and her poor dad.
We're not. I guess I'm never meeting Clark's family. If this is what they do for family time.
Winston's going to be outside caroling. That's as close as he gets to the house.
Just pretty, like, it, literally be walking by with my family. Oh, don't go over there. That's crazy white people. They got somebody possessed in that house. We're going to keep walking.
I want to give a big shout out to the founder, the creator of Rotten Tomatoes, I should say. So Rotten Tomatoes was launched in effect on August 18th by Sen Duong, who was a fan of Jackie Chan movies primarily. And so it's like, how can I get this comprehensive list of Jackie Chan films as they're coming out in the United States? Because after Rumble in the Bronx, there was like sort of a Western reunited interest in Jackie Chan, who was a superstar overseas forever. And so now you had this collection, and the first movie that was going to be on Rotten Tomatoes was going to be
the greatest movie of all time.
Rush Hour.
The greatest movie of all time.
But Rush Hour's release date got delayed. It still became a big hit in September. And so the first movie that ended up being on Rotten Tomatoes that was not affiliated with Jackie Chan was Your Friends and Neighbors. So not quite the hit that Rush Hour became.
Never even heard of it.
Yeah, I think we can give Rush Hour credit for being one of the inspirations along with Jackie Chan. So thank you so much to Sen Duong for creating this thing that we all know and love and celebrate and kind of use as a guideline. I call it the scoreboard for movies, where if you're looking at the tomato meter, it may not necessarily reflect your opinions. And we have this whole podcast dedicated to when we think the tomato meter is right and wrong. But it's just a nice barometer. And now we have the verified audience score to kind of gauge, oh, okay, I agree more with the audience on this one, with the critics on this one. So let's start this conversation off by going back to 1998, when Sen was just creating Rotten Tomatoes. It was a twinkle in his eye. Where was Winston Marshall in 1998? What were you doing? What were your dreams? What were your ambitions?
Well, my parents were getting divorced. That's
good
memory.
How about you, Clark?
Wow. Wow, Mark. Wow. Good choice. Good choice.
Pull the parachute. So 98, but well, I mean, look, you talk about a formative year in somebody's existence.
But, well, and this is what's so funny is I think, I mean, that may have just gotten really personal all of a sudden, but from the standpoint of, I felt like all of a sudden I saw every movie because of that. There was this weird thing where, like, either with my friends or my aunts and uncles, I was just at the movies all the time.
That escapism.
Mm-hmm. And when you talk about, you mentioned earlier off camera, everybody loves to talk about 99 and what 99 was for movies. 98 had bangers.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we already talked about the greatest movie of all time, Rush Hour, which just chef's kiss. But just some of the highlights, because I want other people to be able to chime in on this.
Y'all should have seen Winston right before we went to air. He was circling movies. He was starring stuff. He's got a ranking system. Give us some of your favorites from 98.
First of all, 98, I would have been about to turn 11. So I'm about 10 years old. Pokemon, the first movie, came out. Don't act like that didn't come through with every child was out here in these streets. Just like, this is incredible.
Catch them all.
But you had He Got Game, The Truman Show, Mulan, The Mask of Zorro, The Parent Trap, Ants, The Water Boy, Enemy of the State, A Bug's Life, You Got Mail, Small Soldiers, and a personal rom-com favorite, 6 Days and Seven Nights.
Oh, wow.
Oh, okay. Wow. The Harrison Ford and Anne Heche classic to some, including you.
Yes, sir.
I didn't know you were that, but what is it about 6 Days, Seven Nights that just spoke to your soul?
The same thing that I guess Air Force One did. What? Han Solo in like a, in like on a tropical island with a hot lady? Okay, I'll watch it. Like, I mean,
he doesn't do a bad job of selling that movie, Clark. I mean, when you look back on your 1998, it doesn't have to be as dramatic as Winston's, but where were you in your sort of relationship with movies, in your life, where were you living, all that good stuff?
I was definitely a nerdy middle schooler who loved movies, who definitely had a subscription to Entertainment Weekly. And who was, I grew up in a suburb of Atlanta, so I was certainly at the mall and the movies every weekend. My dad took me to a lot of movies every weekend. And, I think that this is like the formative. It's funny, like we all played in a movie trivia league for a long time. And these are the movies that like really sunk in.
Yeah.
And stuck because I think they did come out, for me at least, during those formative years.
Yeah, and to Clark's point, if you watch the first season of the movie Trivia Schmodown in particular, when I was writing a lot of the questions, most of them are about the list of movies that Winston just rattled off. I mean, I'll say I knew 98 as an interesting year in the movies for a couple reasons for me. So I was writing my college application essays and thinking, like, I'm not getting into Notre Dame, but let's take a shot. I'm probably going to end up at, you know, some East Coast school, maybe something in the ACC, maybe a Virginia Tech, a Florida State, maybe a Wake Forest. We'll see if I become a Demon Deacon like my father before me. But in the midst of all that, you also had these movies that were mirroring each other. Like you said, we had Ants and A Bug's Life. We had Deep Impact and Armageddon. So it's like these similar themes kind of coming through. The big movie that I think of every time I think of 1998, and I'm not saying it's the best movie from 98 because it certainly isn't, pretty good version of Kashmir, is Godzilla. In Williamsburg, Virginia, where we had a movie theater that I worked at for a couple summers, it was not the best movie theater to go see a flick at. Hampton, Virginia, which is a couple towns over, had just opened their AMC. I think it was AMC 24. And it's like, oh, this is the biggest thing. And it opened the weekend of Godzilla.
Wow.
That whole week in school, me and my friend, we were just not sure about how excited we were for Godzilla. We went to go see it Thursday night, like the first show we possibly could. I fell asleep in Godzilla opening night.
How?
Because it's so bad and boring.
No, it's not.
It's terrible.
As a child, I loved it.
Really?
There was a mutant lizard and its little babies all over New York. What are you talking about? And on top of that, you had Professor Fink, he makes you laugh, he makes you think, running the camera the entire time.
Oh, my good Lord, we saw a different movie with all the velociraptors running around Madison Square Garden. Like, that movie was such a misfire. And I think maybe I was just too excited and baby needed a nap at some point. Y'all know me pretty well. You know I need my daily naps. I didn't get a nap that week, and so I was really excited. We go to class, go to the movie theater. Before the movie started, they had one of the employees come out front and do Godzilla trivia. So this is one of the formations of my movie trivia career. They asked the easy question, I think, first was like, what city is Godzilla famous for stomping in Japan? And like, some guy won a t-shirt for saying Tokyo, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to hold out for the hard question. He's like, what Perry Mason star was in Godzilla 1985? And my hand shot up. They called him. I was like, Raymond Burr, got the t-shirt, impressed the theater full of onlookers. And
hence the movie Trivia Schmodown was born.
The movie Trivia Schmodown, the kernel was planted in the microwave for it to pop. So
I will say two questions about the 1998 Godzilla does sound like the movie Trivia Schmodown to me.
It really does. It was the precursor to it, that movie theater trivia. But so that's the movie that I sort of think of when I think of 1998. And it was also a big, interesting year at the Oscars because you had Saving Private Ryan, which I think a lot of people thought was going to win Best Picture at the ensuing 99 Oscars, and it was Shakespeare in Love that took that title. So a lot of cool stuff happening in 1998. The ceremony of the Oscars that was held in 98 was hosted by the legendary Billy Crystal, and that is where Titanic took home 11 statues, the 1997 release. So a lot of cool stuff going on in the world of movies, but then we also look at these movies that we see from 1998. If you had to pick a movie from our list or from something else, Clark, what is the movie that you think maybe still stands up to the test of time the best?
Oh, wow. Well, that's a really hard question. Oh, my gosh.
For Winston, we know he's going to say Rush Hour, regardless of whether he thinks it's true.
Pretty much.
Yikes. I don't know what stands the test of time, because some of these, I would argue, absolutely do not. But, you know, the one that's jumping out at me as kind of one of the last of its kind is The Mask of Zorro. Just a really, like, a big budget, practical stunts adventure that is perfectly cast with a really wonderful love story and stakes and chemistry between its leads.
It's got that loose, swashbuckling kind of nature to it.
I just feel like we don't sincerely or earnestly make movies like that anymore. And this is one that for me has stayed wonderful. And just watching all the horses and the stunts and the sword fighting and Antonio Banderas is so good. That's the first time I remember seeing Catherine Zeta-Jones and being like, wow, she's a star. Is that the best of all? I mean, I don't know, but
that's a good point, though. It's like you really don't see a lot of movies like The Mask of Zorro anymore. No. The closest one that I think I've I've seen is probably an animated film, which would be The Adventures of Tintin, kind of reminded me of like that, like your Indiana Joneses. So
another Steven Spielberg did produce The Mask of Zorro. So maybe
there you go. The connective tissue.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I mean, it's so funny that because also in 1998, Google was this thing that happened. And speaking of Google, I Googled movies from 1998. Do you know what came up?
What came up?
Do you know what came up? First movie that comes up, three movies, Blade from 1998, which I will talk about in a minute for why Blade is such an important movie. The next movie, I believe it's called A Very Unlucky Leprechaun. Yeah, that's the next movie that Google told me came out in 1998. I don't even know if it's on the tomato meter, if critics saw it, if audiences saw it. A Very Unlucky Leprechaun. It stars Tim Matheson as like the dad, and then there's this leprechaun. It is not in the Leprechaun horror franchise. However, guess who plays this very unlucky leprechaun?
No.
Warwick freaking Davis.
What?
You cannot keep that guy from playing a leprechaun, even if it's not in his franchise, Leprechaun, the horror movies. I believe this is like a nice, lighthearted dramedy.
Everything that you just said sounds like Mad Libs to me.
Honestly.
A very wee adjective for
Tim
this leprechaun.
Tim Matheson, an unlucky leprechaun. Warwick Davis, 1998. What?
Oh, God. And speaking of the 90s, Mad Libs. How great were Mad Libs back in the day?
It's pretty awesome.
So the other movie that came out was Major League Back to the Minors. And I'm that's the movie from 98?
I guarantee you that this is, because that is not the three movies that came up for me.
Okay.
So this is very
much
our
Google searches have
been different. Our Google searches have modified. So for me,
we've parted ways in the metaverse.
So you went top picks for you, or you went just popular 1998 movies?
I typed in movies from 1998.
Okay,
I
did you too. Go and I'll tell you what I Googled.
So the three that it gave me, one that makes us, the first one, The Avengers, which I loved that movie.
Oh my gosh.
That Uma Thurman, what is that? Sean Connery. Sean Connery's
the
bad guy.
He's the bad guy. Who's and the, Ralph Fiennes.
Thank you. Ralph Fiennes, Uma Thurman, Sean Connery, Blade, obviously, and then Riddler's Moon. I have no idea what that is. I have never heard of that before.
Riddler's Moon. Well, you
the
do a show
to
called
an unlucky limber.
Capes and Cows. But so maybe even Riddler's Moon is like, if they're thinking, oh, this guy loves Batman villains, let's give him a Riddler movie, even if that's not the Riddler.
That's pretty much probably what happened. In Indiana, a single mother lives with her disabled soon. With her disabled soon on a barren farm until a supernatural growth spurt reinvigorates the fields.
The sequel to The Unlucky Leprechaun.
I mean, we're really building a universe.
Yeah.
We really are.
And now let's add Clark's three movies that Google, again, created in 1998.
Well, you know, of course, what I Googled was not just best movies of 98 or movies from 1998. I had to Google horror movies from 1998.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you
and
did.
And so I found, Blade came up as well. And H2O, which is on
loves
here.
Loves that movie.
Love H2O. I very much enjoy H2O.
Happy Halloween, mother.
So good. But the two that I was like, Oh, yeah. Was Robert Rodriguez, The Faculty, which is Kevin Williamson doing Invasion of the Body Snatchers, which is a really, it has some unsavory words in it, but it overall holds up. Really fun, like fun alien invasion movie. And Practical Magic, which is truly not nostalgically, because I did not see it in 1998, one of my favorite. Sandra Bullock is my queen, and that is one of my favorite Sandy B movies.
Right, and you had that come out around the same time as The Craft, and like I think a lot of people who now talk about what planets are in retrograde and how the universe is shaping their future, it might have come from Practical Magics and The Crafts of the world.
Sure.
So, you know, hey, everybody needs something to believe in. And I'm not saying I believe in that stuff, but I don't not believe in it.
I don't know. You know, Practical Magic and The Craft having an influence on a person, that doesn't sound like me. Does that sound like me?
Not really.
Just a little bit. Well, the movie that influenced, I think, maybe doesn't get its due still, even though everybody celebrates Blade because it's a cool franchise and Wesley Snipes is great as the character. But Blade doesn't get the credit that I think it deserves simply because it came out in 1998, right? Mm-hmm. And then the next year we had X-Men. Mm-hmm. And then we get into the Spider-Man trilogy.
X-Men was 99. I thought it was 2000.
X-Men was right on the border 99 and 2000. That's why we have Brian as a producer here.
Okay. I think it's, I'm going to go, I think it's 2000.
I think it's 2000. I remember anchoring that specifically.
I remember reading about X-Men in Cinescape magazine
in 1999.
So that's what I'm giving
that
it credit for.
Right.
It might have been a little too credit of a year, 99, because we did have The Matrix, as we talked about last week a little bit. We also had The Phantom Menace and The Blair Witch Project. And this is really just me showing off that I do know movies that were released in 1999, because I do have the sinking feeling that X-Men was in the year 2000.
July 2000,
meaning we maybe got
right
a teaser trailer.
Right
in
on that border in July.
Thank you. When I was busy not celebrating my birthday, which happens to be July 7th, if anybody would like to not celebrate with me. But, I mean, I think Blade, it does deserve the lion's share. Maybe not the lion's share because it wasn't the biggest movie. I would give those to the Spider-Man trilogies. But, you know, you had comic book movies come out. You had Superman come out in 78, and you had Batman in 89. And every once in a while, you'd have either a sequel to a Batman or a Mystery Men or something pop up. But then you get Blade, and it's like, we could really do something with this. Became a franchise. You get X-Men 2 years later. We could really do something. It became a gigantic franchise. Spider-Man, now we have the MCU, DC retooling again, but a lot of promise on the horizon. So that really was launched in earnest in the late 90s.
No, absolutely. I Blade is the movie, like you said, doesn't get the credit, but it's the movie that sailed 1,000 ships, if we're being honest. Obviously, X-Men was already in production at that point, but I think seeing what can be done with Blade and maybe even getting a few tweaks out of, because you know, Spider-Man would have been in that production around when X-Men drops. But you see both of those and what they're doing, and you see Raimi kind of adapt, you know, some of that into the lifeblood of his film, and then you get one of the greater trilogies of like life.
And I've always thought Sam Raimi was such a great director at doing that thing, Clark, where he can sort of, he definitely has his own vision, his way that he wants to make a movie, but he also does, even if you look at the Evil Deads and what was happening around horror and filmmaking at that time, he does seem to have his pulse on the public consciousness and the appetite of the public. And so I agree with Winston where Raimi's probably looking at the Blades and the X-Men's of the world and being like, okay, this is some stuff that we can incorporate into how we're going to tell this Spider-Man story.
I was also going to point out, too, with Blade, rated R. I mean, you know, that's especially at the time. If you're making a rated R movie, it's not like something like Deadpool now where you're like, no, people will show up, right? Like, that's a risk. People really took that rating system very seriously, especially in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And so that was a big bet on their part. And of course, you know, Blade went on to have multiple sequels, and hopefully we'll get another one from them. See you soon.
Holiday, can we get a camera in Clark's living room back at the ranch in Atlanta and just have it on your dad during the rave scene in Blade when the blood starts coming out everywhere?
God.
Let's just see how the bulldog Clark, Wolf's dad, reacts to that.
I just don't. It's funny because I even came about telling that story because I'm in this horror movie and I've just told my dad, it's okay. You don't have to watch
him and
this.
Winston can be in the lobby eating popcorn.
Yeah,
just buy a ticket and then You're all good.
No, no, no. I'm a go.
You're going.
But don't take me to the one you want all your friends and family to see because I will the whole time. Oh, hell no. Hell no. No, 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 no. The whole movie.
Well, we talked a little bit about where comic book movies were and really as we know them now in their infancy back in 98. What was the state of horror movies as you were sort of matriculating in your love for horror in the 90s, Clark? Because around this time, you had your Screams, you had your I Know What You Did Last Summer. So kind of walking that line of paying homage to the slashers of yore, but also looking through the lens of like getting into the movie and sort of winking and nodding and a lot of comedy in horror yes. movies in the late 90s.
Well, that's the thing. So really, the 90s is a weird time for horror because people are just throwing things at the wall and seeing what sticks. You have prestige movies like Interview with the Vampire, which is argued like this huge literary adaptation, but also with big movie stars taking it seriously. But then you have weird movies like Mimic and like, you know, it's just like, and vampires. Vampires are popping up all over the place, not just in like before right. Blade. And as I mentioned with an interview. But anyway, Scream comes along and changes everything. So Scream comes out Christmas. Christmas. Do you hear me?
That's why we watch horror movies at Christmas. Christmas 97.
The Exorcist famously comes out at Christmas as well. But
Merry
Christmas.
The banner year for the Ellis family. That movie still haunts my
dreams. Whatever happened to Christmas Vacation? A nice, wholesome, I hate my boss movie. Like, what?
But
Brian, can you look up a Christmas movie that came out in 1998 just to make Winston happy?
Yeah, right? So Scream comes out in December 1996, changes everything because Scream 2 kind of famously comes out less than a year later, mm-hmm. Kind of like they did just now with right. Scream 5 and 6.
And last summer in between those two.
Yes. So now slasher movies have really had a resurgence. But to your point, you know, the idea of this slasher movies that are winking at the audience, that are treating the audience as though they are intelligent, they know the tropes. Right. And so that's where you get in 1998 something like The Faculty, where, you know, again, Kevin Williamson, it's a slasher type of alien movie, right? Mm. It's a body count movie, but it is very much, I mean, it's 100% Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And Robert Rodriguez directing something like The Faculty, he directed the stab segments in the Scream mm-hmm. movies. Mm. And so, anyway, this is his, like, he's getting to play in this Kevin Williamson sandbox.
Yeah. Wow. I just, because that's not something that I would have known for obvious reasons. So it's nice to like kind of hear the history of where that's going because obviously Scream in 96, but in my mind, the biggest horror movie of the 90s being Blair Witch a year later.
Yeah.
To like wrap out the decade, you know?
And so different from what was popular at that mm-hmm. time, you know, in the slasher space. I was just looking down here, Halloween H2O, 1998. That's also Kevin Williamson. This is also the Miramax, this is the Weinsteins, you know? Right. And so that is also something like that Scream, that's
Mimic,
the Faculty.
I think, right. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So the Weinsteins are all in on slashers. Miramax and is all in on this subgenre. But yeah, Kevin has two slasher movies come out that year.
But you see these films, and so as far as comic book movies, it's like they're just starting to get their feet. But yeah. To Clark's point, in the 90s, man, horror franchises were running on fumes because you had like Freddy Krueger and Jason Voorhees and Michael Myers limping into that decade and just trying name brand value opening weekend, hoping to muster something. And it was getting ridiculous with how many sequels we had. You had to do something different. So you could either lean into the meta, which even before Scream did, was Wes Craven's New Nightmare
yes. mm-hmm.
in the mid-90s. But then you also have Halloween H2O, which is like, hey, we're just going to kind of, let's just try to tell this story based off of a previous movie. So you sort of had that requel
yes.
Before we even had the term that was popularized in a later Scream movie.
You do also understand, realizing we're not getting enough black people to go see this. So here's Busta Rhymes to just see if we could, because real talk, I only saw that movie because all my cousins were like, yo, Busta in a movie. And I was mm-hmm. like, all right. And I will never forget him, the water from, because there's a fire going on, happy Halloween, mother. And
oh,
like,
no.
Just otherwise, I would have had nothing to do with
okay,
that movie.
Wait, I've got to do a little visual gag here. Just a second. Okay, ready?
The glasses are coming out.
Well, actually, Busta Rhymes was in Halloween Resurrection, which comes later. It's actually
oh, no.
LL Cool J.
Oh, boy. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Actually.
You well actually, Winston.
She's right, though. She's right. Oh, my God.
Well, you're both right in terms of Halloween H2. Those two Halloween movies being made by said respective hip-hop artists. LL Cool J. And the fact that LL Cool J, but we talked about this movie already, Halloween H2O, on the podcast, so I don't think it's that big of a spoiler for our listeners, survives the movie.
Yeah.
LL Cool J survives the movie. You cannot understand how big that was for a black guy to survive a horror movie.
So Scream 2 came out
1997. Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if that was any sort of reshoot because the amount of dragging that Hollywood got for right. killing Omar and Jada
yeah.
in 2 seconds.
Yep.
You're like, Jada's in the movie. Oh, Jada, come on now. And insta-kill. I guarantee you there must have been some sort of rewrite in here where they were like, okay, LL needs to live. We can't. Because when did Deep Blue Sea come out?
I was just about to say the next year, in 1999
okay.
is Deep Blue Sea.
Thank yeah. you both for acknowledging our expert researcher.
I got you.
Mark Hoffmeyer loves Deep Blue Sea so much. He does a podcast on Deep Blue Sea. He does a weekly podcast on Deep Blue Sea.
Stop.
How?
You should both be on it.
I would love to.
He would love to have you.
But also, how do you not run out of things to talk about?
I'm sure he'd love to have you to talk about Busta Rhymes. I mean LL Cool J
you know
in that movie.
Oh, no.
You know
Look what I've done.
It was right
Look
there.
What
it
I've
was
done.
Right take the shot.
Oh, no.
I'm a comedian. I'm on stage, but I don't take that shot. Coach pulls me out of the game.
That's fair.
But I'll also say, 98, in terms of comedy, was a year that I think we had some high watermarks with There's Something About Mary. Because that was sort of Apex Fairley Brothers, where everything that they liked doing worked. Mm-hmm. In There's Something About Mary, where you had some spoof humor, you had some genuine, like, rom-com touchy-feely stuff that I thought was really well executed. You also had gross-out humor that hit just the right spots, and I think that from There's Something About Mary, it's sort of like how I say how great Van Halen is, but it inspired a lot of copy hair metal bands that weren't as soulful. You could say the same thing about comedies after There's Something About Mary, where they see Ben Stiller get his balls caught in a zipper, and it's like, oh, we need to do that the whole movie. It's no, you don't need to.
And like jizz on the forehead. It's funny you mentioned
Something
About Mary, and you earlier asked, what of these movies stood the test of time?
Okay.
You know what could never be made today? There's Something About Mary, The Waterboy, Rush Hour. You're touching on a bunch of different topics where if you even broach the idea of like, this is a Rush Hour 2 quote, but like, I'll slap you back to the Ming Dynasty. You could never say something like that nowadays. You know what I mean? You can't have the sperm on the head and the balls and the zit. Like, none of that is a thing you could do anymore. But this is some of the peak slapstick kind of offensive comedy that, like, you know, shaped an entire generation.
And just,
you know,
one of the hardest laughs I've ever had in a theater was There's Something About Mary. And to pick up Clark's point earlier of showing your family movies and wondering what the result's going to be, I distinctly remember a Thanksgiving when both sets of grandparents came to visit us in Virginia. That was sort of the midway point. So we had a bunch of family time for Thanksgiving. I was in the other room playing Scrabble with my two grandmas and my mom. And then everybody else was in the living room watching There's Something About Mary on TV. And I was kind of curious to see how Pop-Pop, my grandpa, would react to it. We heard a noise. And I thought Pop-Pop was having a stroke. I thought he was leaving his body that night. He was just laughing so hard at the movie. He was laughing that hard. And to see how hard my grandfather and my brother and my dad, everybody watched that movie, multiple generations, all laughing at the same parts of the same stuff. I think it was the dog scene when he's trying to revive the dog. And again, that's even a tough scene to pull off today.
Yeah.
With how much with how precious now dogs, rightly so, are in movies. So it just warms my heart, that kind of thing where you had a peak with comedy, but sometimes you just keep pushing the envelope. And I think a lot of comedy since then have tried to do what There's Something About Mary did and failed.
Yeah, again, I got to go back to my favorite movie of all time. The fact that we'll never get another Jackie Chan in a bar talking about What's Up, My Ninja. That'll never. But that was literally one of the funniest things ever, because obviously he doesn't get it. He was told to exactly what I do.
Right.
And there's no offense to it where he's trying to be crappy. He's just like, oh, I don't understand culturally. He said that's how, you know, and it just leads to a comedy of errors into an epic fight in a bar. Like, I hate that we can't you know, we won't necessarily find our way back to maybe we will in a few years, but at least right now, there's no way you would see something like this in movies. In this
well, it's the, you know, it's nice to have these movies as sort of time capsules of where we were in 98 and how we progressed as society. And you can always go back to those movies and watch them. But Clark, I guess I'll start with you. What is your overall take on the movies, the TV shows? I mean, again, this is when Friends and Seinfeld was ending its run in 1998. So when you look back on where maybe just the broader strokes of entertainment were in 1998, what do you think of?
I see the end and beginning of a cycle, you know, truly. Like, arguably, you're phasing out things like Seinfeld, Friends, and Will and Grace have a few more years. But, like, if Seinfeld is sort of the continuation, not literally, but of the sitcom, of Cheers, of this, and it's sort of, in a way, subverting the tropes of a sitcom, right? Because that's the whole point, is you hate these people and it's a show about nothing.
In the same way that Scream would kind of take the baton.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then I'm seeing here also, you know, A Bug's Life, which is, to me, one of the first Pixar movies that I remember being like, whoa.
I think that was number two on top of that, right?
Because it was right after Toy Story,
yeah. Bug's Life, then Monsters, Inc.
Right. So it's like we're in this sort of, yes, it's not the first, but we're solidifying what this is. And we're seeing, you know, things like, Wild Things comes out this year. I mean, that also feels like truly in terms of style of movie, that feels like something from a before time that's kind of crossing over. So that is, to me, the thing that stands out here is the end of 1998. And that's probably why 1999 is so revered, because we're seeing sort of a true culmination of a change in cinema and pop culture.
I think I just can't shake sports right now. This is your championship round that you didn't quite get to the big dance, the big game. And then next year is when you finally like get the belt.
Oh, this is Jordan losing to the Pistons.
This is losing to the Pistons and then finally getting by the Bad Boys and getting the title. Like this, you're exactly right. This is the setup for that full success, because you're even looking at near the end of just straight Disney animation as is. You still get a few, but like Mulan, one of the last great classics of that Disney animation style before they really lean into Pixar.
Right. And the Prince of Egypt, which was not Disney, but it was still like straight animation, but it was the Bug's Life and Ants sort of got the lion's share of the excitement for where animated films could go back in 1998. And then 99, you also had that easy juxtaposition in 99 where it's like the Phantom Menace. And it cost so much money, and we put so much into this. And then you also have the Blair Witch Project, which was like, you know, made
for...
We
paid $5.
Right. And everybody thought that movie was like real for like the first week. And we're like, what are we watching?
It's not real.
Oh, boy. I was going to say, last week we talked about Keanu Reeves movies and we talked about The Replacements, which is 2000. And when I was rewatching that movie, and there's the dance sequence, which we also talked about last week, I thought of There's Something About Mary, because the credits is the sing-along. And so there were a handful of things that I was like, oh, and, you know, the knockoff thing of like, oh, this was very popular and successful in something here. And then we see it repeated over and over again. And actually, now that I'm looking at this list, I can see those influences. But yeah, that's so funny. That like actually stood out to me when I was rewatching The Replacements.
Every time I hear Build You Up Buttercup by the Foundations, I still think of the end credits of There's Something About Mary. Also, a couple great rom-com, romantic, slanted movies. How Stella Got Her Groove Back came out that summer.
Dude.
And Angela. Then you have the You've Got Mail, which ironically might be the movie that stands the test of time the most, along with How Stella Got Her Groove Back, just because we can always fall in love with somebody, regardless of whether it's the very early days of AOL. You had the big bookstore coming in, taking away the mom and pop bookstore, and You've Got Mail. It just, again, it's a great movie, if for no other reason, because Meg Ryan and Greg Kinnear have the single most amicable breakup that I've ever seen on screen, because they just show up to a bar and they're just talking. They're like, yeah, is it not working for you? Not working for me? All right, well, hey, fist bump. We gave it a good run. I've broken up with people like in real life that nicely, but I've never seen it on screen that well.
It was
something to aspire to.
Dude, You Got Mail from me. This is peak Dave Chappelle as like the black best friend that like loves just dropping little jokes here and there and getting a little push.
Great service in that movie.
Cause you had him in Robin Hood Men in Tights previously as Achu. You know,
that's like, you.
Yeah, it's such an underrated gag of that movie that he's got. I think he's got Reebok pumps, yep, and his feather cap is a backwards hat.
Yep.
Oh my gosh,
it's just so good.
Yeah. I am at you. Yeah. And his father is Esnees.
Esnees and Achu, T'Challa, like it's right there. I got to talk about one of the greatest directors of all time, and Spike Lee puts out He Got Game, and you bring Denzel into this film with the about to be, Hall of Famer, as he's really getting introduced to the league, Ray Allen as Jesus Shuttlesworth. And one of the best stories that Spike has told, and really what that movie was able to do and really kind of bring to audiences that maybe don't know a lot of like that kind of history of how that might happen for somebody on that trajectory.
And to see Ray Allen have a performance like that.
Absolutely.
So precocious. Who would have known that some 15 years later, he just ripped my Spurs loving heart out by hitting that shot to the Heat. I will never get over why Tim Duncan wasn't on the floor to get the rebound and secure the championship. We got our vengeance the next year. I'll be fine.
I was just going to ask, is He Got Game the reunion of Spike Lee and after Malcolm X and Denzel?
I think so.
That's a huge moment, right? To have them coming back together on screen. Mm-hmm. It's a big year.
It was a good year for cinema. Obviously, a great year for Rotten Tomatoes because they were born. It was our impetus on August 18th, and now we have Rotten Tomatoes. We got the books like the Rotten Movies We Love and Rotten Tomatoes the Card Game. It's a really fun game to play. It's a good drinking game. It's a good game to play with your family. There's a lot of different alleys and alleyways you can take with the Rotten Tomatoes card game, so check that out. Can't get out of here and go to mailbag before I remind everybody that there were actual Christmas movies that came out in 1998. Such as, Clark's family's going to watch this year. Bride of Chucky came out in 1998.
Sure. Yeah, of course.
For Winston, don't worry, Jonathan Taylor Thomas classic, I'll Be Home for Christmas.
Yo, that's a banger! Look, I'm looking right here. That is one of the greatest family movies, one of the greatest Christmas movies of all time. And it's one of the things that actually helped me and my girlfriend really get as close as we are now. Is her insane love for JTT and me for different reasons, but that man is America's sweetheart, or he was for at least 5 or 6 years. So sorry, that movie's so good.
That is how you know, that takes me back to a time and place because the fact that this was when I kind of grew out of Jonathan Taylor Thomas because I did not see I'll Be Home for Christmas, but when Tom and Huck came out just a few short years earlier, I was there front
you
and
had,
center.
You had a JTT calendar,
Did I?
Jonathan Taylor Thomas,
because it was
Jessica
him and Jessica Biel. That's why I remember.
In that movie.
Because I was like, that's my dog and Jessica Biel.
Lumberg himself, Gary Cole, great comedic actor, pops in and the tomato meter says, 23%.
Yeah,
23%. 41% with the audience, which includes Winston and his incredible girlfriend.
Well, we'll come back. We'll do Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong for Christmas movies, and you can do I'll Be Home for Christmas.
Absolutely.
I'll do The Conjuring 2. And we've got the show all planned out.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Friday After Next is rotten, and so I'm going to staunchly defend that. This will be my runner-up for sure, but I got
to... And we have all these talking points, again, thanks to Sen Duong and his idea to make this thing called Rotten Tomatoes way back in 1998. It's just so wonderful having Clark and Winston back. Clark, we got the big movie that you're starring in, Malum, coming out in theaters nationwide tomorrow. Yes. So people can grab their tickets and go see it wherever you are in the country. Go check out Malum.
Please do. If you're interested in supporting, independent cinema, it really makes a difference if you go see this one in the theater because it's actually getting a theatrical run. So it was made with a lot of love, despite how scary this movie is. It's very scary.
And Winston probably running to the lobby within 15 minutes with Clark's dad. So when we can't catch you in a horror movie, where can we catch you? What you up to?
Absolutely. You can find me all over the internet at The Swaggy Blurred. Go check out my YouTube channel. I got a lot of great reviews over there. Got my, I forgot to mention this last week, my Watch the Throne Bel Air review podcast. We dive into the episodes, but a lot of the discussion of like the storylines that they're presenting and what that means to the Black community and things like that. So definitely check that out. See me on Capes and Cows over with Christian Harloff. That's pretty much it right now.
Y'all got any TV you're watching that you're excited about?
Yes. Sorry.
Ladies first.
Very energetically. Party Down.
Yeah. You found Party Down. Oh, welcome.
Well, no, the new episodes.
Wait, what?
Oh, it's back.
Wait, yeah, it's back.
What?
It's back.
There's billboards all over
Season
town.
Season 3. This is why I am telling people, because no one knows. And y'all, this new episodes, most of the cast, Lizzie Kaplan's the only one who's not back because she was shooting something else. Y'all, it is so, if you are a fan of the original series, this is just the perfect show to, the perfect cast to usher back into a revival. It's funnier. It's as funny as ever. Same with South Park. South Park's also back. And
wow.
I am yeah, just South as my Park's little right comedy nuggets that I enjoy every Saturday.
Anything with Ken Marino in it, I'm going to watch. Ugh. So Party Down on the list. Winston, you counter with what?
I mean, there's obviously all of the main staples that everybody's talking about. So The White Lotuses, The Last of Us, Severance, all that. I'm going to give you a nugget that you maybe aren't paying enough attention to, and that's Shrinking. On Apple TV Plus.
Oh yeah, Harrison Ford, Jason Segel,
Jessica Williams, my Groundlings teacher. She's killing it with her recurring guest star. But it is so good, and it genuinely gets to it. It reminds me a lot of what Weeds did early on, where you're using dark comedy to really address grief and how that affects yourself, how it affects your family, how it can affect parenting or being raised by someone that is going through the similar grief that you are. It is so well done, and I cannot speak higher of it. And it also has, oh my goodness, Brett Goldstein, who's Roy Kent in Ted Lasso. He's one of the executive producers on the show as well. So you're getting a lot of heartfelt energy into that show.
There you go. My buddy, comedian Matt Knudsen, also in Shrinking. So check that out on Apple TV. And as for me, I'm just here to stump for Rotten Tomatoes and their 25th birthday. Unlike me, they actually celebrate it. Pick up the Rotten Tomatoes card game. Fun with your family, with your friends, with your drinking buddies, as Winston, the Vanna to my Patsy, Jack, is modeling it so well in Clark with the dead-on studio audience reactions. As we say goodnight here for Jacqueline Coley, I am Mark Ellis and the whole gang here at Rotten Tomatoes and RottenTomatoes.com. Thank you, and we'll continue to enjoy the birthday celebration all the live long year. Happy 25th, Rotten Tomatoes.